It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy number 317. My name is Joey, still here as always with my co-host and friend Len, still the other panel brother. What's going on over there?
Nothing. Very, very little. It's dark. It's decent weather still.
I actually hate that it's dark right now, because like 3 weeks ago this time it was not dark, and clearly now it is dark and it is affecting my circadian rhythm. Is that the word, circadian rhythm?
I don't know. It's something along the lines of 2.5 minutes of daylight is lost every day this time of day, and it slows down. And not only that, it may be dark 7:30-ish p.m. Soon we have to change the clock, and it's going to be dark at 6:30 and much earlier. And it's like, whatever. It's I'll see you in April.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Six months hibernation for me.
So that's how I feel too, buddy. That's all right. We got lots of good programming to take care of over the winter, at least. So, as always, Len, we got to start with last week's quote of the week. Listening back to this episode for the episode from last week, I botched this quote when I read it, so I'll try and get it right this time.
I was off. I thought it was going to be somebody else. I totally guessed.
I don't know who this guy is either. Another name of a person who sounds like they carried a musket to church. The evil of aristocracy is not that it necessarily leads to the infliction of bad things or the suffering of sad ones. The evil of aristocracy is that it places everything in the hands of a class of people who can always inflict what they can never suffer. That's from G.K. Chesterton. Great name. No one got it, obviously. And this week's quote, a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity. An optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. That's by, I don't know, that sounds like Confucius Say type stuff there. Something you might see in a fortune cookie after a nice meal at the Mandarin. After your eighth plate of sweet and sour chicken balls, you might grab a fortune cookie, and that might be what's on it.
stick with your wife. That's the Homer Simpson one. Remember that? And unfortunately, they ran out of that when they had to give him the other one. I forget what the other one was, but I remember the first one was stick with your wife. That was
it's so funny. The rules, as always, pals, don't look it up. No Googling, none of that stuff. If you want to find it in a book or something, go to the library. We all got to spend more time there.
Yeah, use the Dewey Decimal System. Like, bring that back to life.
Exactly. We got
to thumb through the catalogs there, where you have to go through the little cards to try to find.
We need to embrace tradition and reject modernity on this program. So if you win, you actually get your next domain hosting renewal on EasyDNS, which is dope. Don't forget, this is the podcast sidekick to the newsletter. You can sign up for the newsletter at accessofeasy.com. I think you get a discount. I forget what it is. I looked at this like weeks ago, and I've been saying it on the show ever since. But you get a discount when you just sign up for the newsletter. All you gotta do is leave your email, and you can get the newsletter in the I guess on a regular basis every week. We talk about the top 5 or 6 stories, and then there's also a few other things that we don't cover on the show that are worth your time. Len, I gotta say, I like doing the show, and I find myself more and more reading the newsletter. Are you the same way?
No, I have so much material I have to go through in general through a week for our show, and for this show, it's hard to get to anything else. I've been putting off personal things that I want to take advantage of because I just don't have the time, unfortunately. Between family and everything, is just there's enough time in a day, but you know what? Hopefully things turn around in terms of having things organized.
That's right.
And there's stuff. Yeah, I don't want to get to it, but our show is our show. I was going to say stuff our show, but
we got enough going on. Yeah. Okay. So we got how many stories today? 1, 2, 3, 5. 4. Yeah. So where do you want to start? Let's hop in.
The xenomorph malware. And let's rate this guy right off the bat. This name, 2 out of 5 stars for me, and nothing spectacular. It reminds me of a terrible 80s horror flick. How about you, Joey?
Xenomorph reminds you of a horror flick?
1980s, something along those lines. It almost reminds me of something like Aliens or something. It just gives me that vibe.
I get it. People of my vintage, millennials, will remember Animorphs, the book series that everybody always wanted every time the book flyer. I can't remember the name of that thing. The Scholastic used to run this program where every month teachers would get this like very small offering of books available for kids in their class. I can't remember what it's called. Book Orders, I think they called it. I mean,
you
there was
the bookmobile.
The bookmobile used to park not far from my house, actually, when I was a kid. All right. That's a story for another time. But book orders came every month, and everyone ordered basically the same like 3 things. Yikes pencils, which you may remember. those very colorful erasers, Goosebumps books or Animorphs books. And Animorphs was a sort of a Johnny come lately in the genre of youth adventure with a little bit of sci-fi mixed in. Anyway, that's what it reminds me of. I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5. That's my rating for that name.
You're very lenient, but well, the Xenomorph malware, just like the 80s movies that I was just talking about, they get rewrites by Hollywood. This one is the same thing. Because, you know, with Hollywood, they try to squeeze every dollar out of their intellectual property. Well, this malware has reemerged, and this time it's coming around with new capabilities. And this malware is now targeting banks and financial institutions in the U.S. and Spain. Sadly, they probably came too late to this game, because I suspect many of the banks are basically insolvent, and the malware is probably going to get IOUs from these banks. The malware is dangerous because it's capturing personal information from these institutions, including credit card numbers, bank numbers, social security numbers, and the malware could also steal passwords and login credentials. This malware has been around for quite some time, 2017 when it was first discovered. It's quite a long time ago in the malware world. And it's being distributed through a variety of methods, including phishing emails, malicious websites, and infected USB drives. Who the heck is plugging in USB drive that they just get without even, I don't know, like, this is the wrong way of doing things. If you're listening to this program, hopefully you're not just plugging in USBs into your computer. Anyways, once a computer is infected with the Xenomorph malware, the malware can install itself in the computer's hard drive and can be very difficult to remove. And for people who think that they may have their computer infected by Xenomorph, hopefully nobody listening to this program does, you should change your passwords for all your online accounts, monitor your financial statements for any suspicious activity. Also consider punting your computer or reformatting it, because I don't trust any of these antivirus software. That's just me. And the same thing as always, be careful when you get an email about clicking on stuff just willy-nilly. You have to be very careful on something. Hover your mouse or the cursor over what it is the link is. Try to decipher if it indeed is coming from, say, TD Bank or something like that. Right. Because phishing emails, they often look like they're coming from legitimate companies, and in reality, they're not, and they're just redirecting you somewhere else to try to steal your information. Talk about this all the time. Keep your software up to date. This is something that's very key. If you're having old software, there's going to be probably holes out there that is going to be easier actually to exploit, especially for people who are aware of these holes that are going to be in older software. So they could patch these vulnerabilities and you're good to go. If you really must, you could run one of these virus scan programs. I'm not a big fan of them, but find one that is, I guess, reputable these days. Do your own research. And also the last thing, man, those USB drives, they might look nice. Plugging them in without even thinking twice, you're asking for trouble, because if somebody loads something on it, unless you know for sure it's clean, plugging it in, you know, it's not the way to do. Maybe you have a standalone computer that's disconnected from everything. Maybe you could test it on that, or maybe just extract it on that and then delete the computer afterwards. There's different ways to do it. Don't just use his USB keys and just plug them in, because you're asking for a world of hurt if you do.
There's some pretty cool tech in this malware. I know it's kind of flies in the face of what you're saying. Like, we don't want to really glorify this activity, obviously, on this program. But think about this, okay? This is pretty cool. From the article, Xenomorph came to the attention of experts in 22, blah, blah, blah. This malware is known for using overlays to capture personally identifiable information, as you mentioned. Notably, it features a sophisticated automated transfer engine, enabling a wide range of actions, modules, enhancing its adaptability. Now, here's the cool part. Xenomorph has added capabilities to its arsenal, including an anti-sleep feature, a mimic mode to avoid detection, and the ability to simulate touch actions. So this is close to like a zero click sort of vulnerability, right? Like once it's in, anything can happen. Anyone can win, as the OLG slogan goes. I am interested to see how this stuff is made, honestly. And I think, Len, this marks the first time, I know this is not exactly targeting banks, it's still targeting users, but that users' banking information was explicitly targeted by the malware, right? Most of the time, it's kind of a side effect or a second order offering from people's carelessness. But it looks like this is actually specifically targeting that information, which I believe is a first.
And what does that achieve, given how much people have in savings these days?
Not much.
Right.
Not
right. Much. The amount of effort.
Put a moth in there.
They should have tried tacking something else. Maybe credit cards, because, you know, Well, even that's tapped out. So really these days, unfortunately, everybody's feeling the pinch. Even people writing these malware programs, there's no way to squeeze, right? Like this is, it's a sad state of reality. The economy is hurting everybody.
When is the Biden administration going to bail out the malware engineers? They need a bailout, Len.
How could you frame that? I mean, you know what? Given who's in Congress and in Senate, maybe they could just pass it, just tack it into one of these laws. Fetterman, he doesn't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah,
and if Feinstein, you could just say this is going to be helping out a bunch of people that require, and she'll just nod and
nod off. Maybe
is her daughter voting for her? I'm curious. Is
she got that anyway. POA though. I'll tell you that.
Let's talk about a phishing campaign. That's it looks like the cyber campaign's targeting luxury hotels. This is another first. We've not talked about anything remotely close to this. And attackers, they're using social engineering tactics to trick employees of these luxury hotels into revealing sensitive information. And it might be time to retrain the Trump hotel staff and not to be tricked by these simple tricks, right? They can't be duped. Come on, Trump guys. The attackers send emails that appear to be from legitimate sources. We just talked about this in the last one, such as customers or other employees. And these emails often contain malicious attachments or links to it. So when somebody goes out, opens it, clicks it, well, malware gets installed on the victim's computer. And here we are. The malware could then steal the victim's login credentials and other sensitive data information. And the attackers are particularly targeting luxury hotels because they believe that these businesses are the ones that have the most valuable data and less likely to have strong security measures in place. That makes sense in terms of the people over there might have valuable data, because who's going to be taking advantage and using one of these luxury locations? Probably with somebody of means. And if you get access to their information, I'm not saying this is a good business. I'm just saying this is potentially an opportunity rather than targeting banks of bank accounts of people that have less than $1,000. If you go after somebody that has quite a bit of money and you can just catch him off guard while he's sleeping on his yacht, well, you know, might be able to get access to a whole bunch more ill-gotten booty as a result. So yeah, so it looks like Motel 6 is safe for the time being, but those luxury motels, yeah, they're under the radar for these people.
Man, it's been more than 10 years since I've had any ill-gotten booty. So one thing to note here, how about this, Len? You are not a coffee guy. I'm trying to think of a service you would use, because I want to relate this to something that you would do. I don't think it happens at golf courses, which I know you frequent, you lucky guy. But for me, I think about this Friday. I think about Tim Hortons. And Tim Hortons is a place where I used to go a lot, especially in university when I first started drinking coffee. I can't remember when it started, but I would say in the last 7 or 8 years. If I go to Tim Hortons for a coffee, or if I'm like driving home from somewhere in the morning and I stop at McDonald's for a breakfast burrito, I can almost guarantee that no matter how simple the order and no matter how rote the skill required to fill the order by the person working behind the counter, someone is going to mess something up. I'm either not going to get the coffee I want, they're going to forget to put the salsa in the bag, I'm not going to get a straw, something is going to happen. There's been a clear decline in competency, I think, across most of the service sector, of which, you know, this is included, or in which this is included, these hotels and whatnot. And what we're seeing here is social engineering attacks on people who have access to maybe low-level security clearances that can lead to breaches in data, as you mentioned, among other things. Is this a problem with the hotels, or is this a problem sort of more broadly in the economy that's being exposed in places where there used to be some baseline of competence that you could count on as a patron of one of these hotels? I would say it's the latter. I think there is a crisis of competence in society now, and you're seeing it play out more and more, both in the way that you just can't seem to get two creams and two sugars if you ask for it, and in the way that your data might be at risk if you give it to a hotel, luxury or otherwise. Or we've talked many times about SIM swapping, social engineering SIM swaps at mobile carriers, sort of in the same vein. The problem to me seems like one related to broad lack of competence in society kind of starting to surface, right? It seems to me to be the case.
And who's to blame?
I mean, there's a lot of people to blame. That's an hour and a half on its own. Like, I mean, we get lost in the weeds on that in our other show sometimes, but the thing is, like, how do you protect yourself against this? you basically have to like have all your data at all times. You can't ever give up your name or credit card number to a resort or, you know, an airline or whatever. Like, is that where we are? I don't think we're there quite there, but it seems like we're getting closer and closer. We're certainly inching that way.
Yeah. I mean, you can't book an airline without a credit card. Unfortunately, those days are gone. So if you are going to fly, you're going to have to provide that information. There's no way around it. And the same, I would imagine with hotels, because you're booking for something far away.
For sure. Yeah.
Geographically from where you're located.
Security deposit, right? They need some kind of guarantee if you cause damage on the property. All this to say that like it's becoming clear that there needs to be a way to avoid this. And the people who are in charge of protecting you from it, sort of this first line of defense, they're not going to do it anymore. They don't have the wherewithal to do it for you. So I don't know what do we do with this? I was, because reading this, I'm thinking to myself, like, what are you supposed to do if you're staying at this hotel and the guy working behind the desk gets, you know, finessed by somebody over the phone? Then what? Like, that's nothing you can do about that. You're at the pool. You're having another cigarette at the casino or whatever. Like, I don't know.
I agree.
You're done. Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very precarious now in all these different situations where I don't think it was 10 years ago. Like I said, in the last decade. I don't know exactly when, but it's clear it's happening.
Well, stay at the Roach Motel. I could almost guarantee you that attackers are not going to be going after that, because let's be honest, the clientele that visits that probably don't have a lot of money. Yeah. So you just got to lower your standards in terms of what you're going to be using as accommodations.
Your data is always safe if you sleep under a bridge. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You have nothing to worry about at that point. This is one that actually I wanted to talk about in our last CVP episode, but here we are. Yeah. Canada. Well, some interesting news coming up from them in the UN. A new United Nations declaration, which was launched last week by the Foreign Affairs Minister, Melanie Joly. Well, signatories say that this is going to take steps to address online disinformation. A non-binding document that sets out a number of recommendations for governments, technology companies, and other stakeholders on how to counter the spread of disinformation online. We've talked about disinformation many times, and this story is really, really insane. The declaration defines disinformation as false or misleading information that is intentionally spread or to deceive or manipulate people. It acknowledges that disinformation can have a serious impact on democracy, human rights, and public health.
The terrible trifecta, just constantly, over and over again. Where's children?
This declaration,
children mentioned it all in there or no? Probably not.
Sorry?
Children mentioned in there at all?
I guess you could consider it in human rights. It could be a subsection of that. Maybe. But anyways, this declaration calls on governments to take on a number of steps to address disinformation, including promoting social media literacy and critical thinking amongst the public, supporting independent fact-checking organizations, regulating social media platforms and other online platforms in a way that protects human rights and freedoms of expression. The declaration also calls on technology companies to take a number of steps to address this disinformation, such as including investing in tools and technologies to detect and remove disinformation, promoting transparency and accountability in their algorithm and ranking systems, and working with fact-checking organizations to identify and label disinformation. This declaration was signed on by 27 different countries, including Canada. Other countries signed on: France, United States, United Kingdom, and a bunch of others. Well, some people say this is a significant step forward, a global effort to address disinformation online, but given the fact who's defining this and what they're trying to achieve, and look at what's happened with Twitter/X and how Elon Musk has been vilified in his approach for trying to open things up. Now, it's still very much a walled garden, but it's much open compared to used to be. And given all the steps that has been taken place since he's taken over Twitter and then renamed it to X, I don't have much faith in this U.S. declaration to really do anything aside from ensure. Yeah, well, if I had to guess, I mean, there's a narrative. They want to keep it the way it is, and they don't want it to. They don't want to lose the story here. They could control it even further with this. 27 countries signed on to this. What else could I say?
I want to go to the bottom of the article, National Post. I almost don't even want to tell you which paper published it, because I don't think you should be giving these people any clicks. But Len, the liberal use of quotes, quotation marks, at the back half of this article is nuts. Here we go. They have also promised to not, quote, unduly restrict human rights online, quote, especially freedom of expression. That means they will refrain from under the guise of, combating disinformation, quote, blocking or restricting access to the internet, eroding privacy, intimidating, harassing, or abusing journalists, researchers, and human rights defenders, interfering with their ability to operate freely, or criminalizing or otherwise punishing the exercise of the right to freedom of expression online. Like, fuck you won't. Like, fuck you won't. There's no chance of this, okay? Look back over the last 3 years. I'm not going to quote you the exact times. I'm not going to quote you the exact events, nor am I going to quote you the exact items, line items, that would have gotten you fired from your job, harassed online, banned from Twitter, banned from Meta, labeled as a Russian asset, labeled as dangerous to your government, all these things. These people can't be trusted. Period. End of story. That's all I'm going to say.
Let's move on to Rumble. And this is the less restrictive platform for videos in comparison to something like YouTube. Well, Rumble's being criticized by officials and media outlets in the United Kingdom because they did not act on a request to demonetize the comedian Russell Brand. And Brand is currently trying to fight off some accusations of sexual assault. And these accusations are from an anonymous source. He, of course, is denying the charges and, well, he's doing what he can to fight it. But platforms like YouTube have moved ahead and decided to demonetize him even before a decision has been reached by the courts. Furthermore, there hasn't been a charge, so nothing even presented before the courts as of right yet. So it's, this guy's guilty before charged. Rumble is taking criticism from some people in the UK, but Rumble CEO Chris Pavlovsky has maintained that these allegations have nothing to do with the content on Rumble's platform. We talked about this bill called the Online Safety Bill in the UK. Now, this is now intertwined in the story, and it requires online platforms to remove harmful content or illegal content. And this law comes into effect next month. And there is going to be a standoff between Rumble and UK based on this law. Now, somebody's going to have to make an argument, a very strong argument, that Russell Brand being monetized on Rumble is deemed to be harmful. It's definitely not illegal content, so they have to use the harmful as their only justification for having him demonetized. But this is going to have, I think, some implications moving forward, because I suspect there's going to be a butting of the heads between Rumble and the UK, because I can't see any way around this, given what's already transpired between YouTube and, you know, from what I could see on X, there's a lot of people, they already nailed Russell Brand to the cross, even without a charge being laid. I'm not trying to say that he did or didn't do anything. I don't know. But, you know, people are quick to make a judgment. And in fact, like, YouTube has moved ahead to demonetize him. Something's going to happen with Rumble. What? I don't know. But keep your eyes open.
YouTube is anti-free speech. People who want to ban this guy are anti-free speech. You're hearing the harmful term over and over and over again. It's easy to define it the way you want. I'm pretty sure we just talked about it in the story before this. Certainly it was mentioned in the article. It's all bull. No one should be found guilty before they are even charged with anything. Certainly they shouldn't be demonetized, attempted to debank this guy. And now any company that doesn't cooperate gets letters from the government. This is not the government's role to tell private companies who can and can't use their platform. It's absolutely insane. We talk a lot about the third world tendencies of some first world, alleged first world governments, you know, among them, you know, financial and fiscal policies that debase currency at rates that, you know, were previously thought impossible. But one we don't talk about often enough is this idea that sitting members of certain parliaments, congresses, et cetera, are writing letters to private companies asking that someone who has no charges against them, no charges against them, be demonetized and deplatformed? I don't think so. I give big kudos to Rumble to this. I never donate to anything, Len. I might donate to Rumble or pay for premium or something. I love this. And it's not about whether or not I think the guy is guilty. The question is one of law and precedent. And if you're on the wrong side of this, you know, I don't want to talk to you about it. You don't get it, because one day it'll be you or could be you. And one day it'll be me or could be me. And I want to make sure that I'm on the correct side of this. It is innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around.
Isn't Rumble a Canadian company? I know that they
are. You didn't mention it, but they are. Yep.
Yeah. These are based out of Toronto and traded on the
Glenn Greenwald is a big part of Rumble now. Like, famously was the guy who gave Snowden the platform first. You know, is he causing harm by reporting that the Ukraine war is not everything that people seem to think it is? Like, is our government asking to have him taken down or demonetized? No, because he's too big a name. And like Russell Brand, you say what you want about the guy, but he's talking about a lot of stuff that over the last 3 years, Len, has got you demonetized. Like, I don't, forgive me for not believing every allegation when other factors seem to point to a more definitive, more simple to understand cause for this sudden action against the man. Again, we'll wait and see how this plays out, but it doesn't look promising from my point of view.
Let's talk about something else that may not look promising. And it's Fauci and the CIA. There's some sort of connection and COVID as well.
Can't spell Fauci without CIA, by the way.
That is true. On September 26, just a couple of days ago, the United States House Committee on Oversight and Accountability released a press release alleging that Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, may have attempted to influence the CIA investigation into the origins of COVID-19. And the press release cites a whistleblower who alleges that Dr. Fauci visited the CIA headquarters back in February of 2021. And at that time, he met with senior officials to discuss the investigation. The whistleblower also alleges that the CIA offered six analysts significant financial incentives to change their position on the COVID-19 origin from a lab leak to inconclusive. The press release also notes that Dr. Fauci prompted the drafting of a paper titled Proximal Origins, and which is used to attempt to disprove the lab leak theory. And the press release concludes by stating that Chairman Brad Winstrup, and he's a Republican based out of Ohio, and of the select subcommittee of the coronavirus pandemic, is seeking all documents and communications related to Dr. Fauci's access to the CIA facilities and their CIA employees. It's also important to note that these are not just allegations, and that Dr. Fauci has denied, and Dr. Fauci has denied everything, any wrongdoing. The CIA has also denied offering any financial incentives to analysts to change their position on COVID-19 origins. This investigation still goes on. It's ongoing. And it's possible there's going to be more information that's going to be uncovered in the next little while that's going to shine a light on this. We all thought ourselves, we all had our ideas where things came from. I'm not going to say what mine are, but I like that this is, you know, coming to roost. And I don't want to say that he's right, Dr. Fauci is right, Dr. Fauci is wrong, or he was able to coerce people into changing their theory, changing reports to say this is inconclusive. But let's be honest here. Something is fishy. Even the timing of the origin is very fishy too. I've noted that back in, there was testing of wastewater in late 2019.
Yeah.
I know in Italy, but also different parts of the world, I would imagine, they've detected COVID-19 in the wastewater. So this was out in the wild long before we saw it hit the wet market in Wuhan. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know how it's going on. I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of this. And ultimately, I think this is going to be a big question mark. And what did it cost us in the end? An economy. We got wrecked as a result. We're still paying the price 3 years later, and there's no end in sight to this. They crippled the economy because of this. And what else could I say?
I mean, you may remember in 2016, seems like eons ago now, when the Steele dossier came out. You know what the Steele dossier is or was?
No.
It was during the Trump election run-up. The Clinton campaign, it turns out, after some research and, you know, deliberation among interested parties in the United States Senate and Congress, that the Clinton campaign basically invented the credentials in terms of like a history of quality work for this guy named Christopher Steele. And they paid Mr. Steele in order to dig up evidence, quote unquote evidence, that Donald Trump had colluded with Russia and was attempting to steal the election vis-a-vis, you know, nefarious means, among them, you know, among the reasons for this, that Russia had evidence of him, you know, with the hookers and the golden shower tapes and all these things. Of course, none of this ended up being true. But what we can say is true is that three-letter agencies paid for that document and the subsequent production of evidence out of their own pockets, out of their own coffers. And so when people say that this is an impossible thing and shouldn't even be considered, it's so far removed from the Overton window in terms of what's possible, both politically and financially in a first world country, free of corruption, you know, make of that statement what you will. I say it just happened like 5 years ago. You know, we just found this out like five, six years ago when Trump was, you know, after Trump won the election, that this stuff was all invented. Christopher Steele was a fraud, and these agencies paid for the research more or less, along with the campaign, the Clinton campaign. Why is this? You know, this is way more high stakes, if you ask me. We've all seen the emails by now where Fauci tries to discredit anything that's not related to a lab leak theory. Like, okay, man, to your point, Len, about 2019, again, anecdotal. Yeah, Joey, Len, why are you guys talking like this? You don't know anything. You're not doctors. That's true. I don't know anything. I'm just another clown from, you know, God knows where, talking about a bad, bad flu that I had in 2019. But I'll tell you what, I'm super healthy. I'm very athletic. I got crazy wind, and I was on the couch for almost 2.5 weeks with a terrible, terrible, terrible flu in 2019. You're saying they tested for wastewater in certain places in the world 2019. They found it. I think a lot of people, if you look back at when this pandemic craze, the sort of, you know, the social media piece of the pandemic and the spread of the pandemic really took hold, was by 2020. You know, by that time, it was already circulating. I think everyone agrees on that now and realizes that these lockdowns we did in March of that year and, all, you know, its subsequent lockdowns were basically a complete waste, as you mentioned, a rug on currencies, economies, and societies all over the world. Why is it beyond question that people don't want to be seen as having got this wrong and caused all this just to protect their egos and their reputations? Why is that too far afoot to believe? It's not. The stakes are so high that it's almost impossible that they wouldn't do this. No one is just going to be like, ah, you know what? Hands up on this one. I got it. It was my fault. Didn't mean to. Wet market. We made it up. Sorry. It turns out the lab that was like a block away was the place. Yeah. The one we're funding. Yeah. That's the one. Oh yeah. That's it. Yeah. 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 There's no way. And I hope this continues. I hope there's, you know, more stuff uncovered and more research done and, you know, diligent people spend time with these things and get this right. Not because I particularly care to see Fauci paste it. He gets pasted enough and, you know, he doesn't have many years left on God's green earth, but I don't want to do this again. And, you know, we've seen, you and I talked about this offline, maybe on the show too, I forget, but, you know, this like kind of recent, I don't want to say call to arms, but, you know, a recent kind of refreshed vigor for masking lockdowns and the like here in Ontario and Canada, and I think other places as well. Don't do this again. The only way to not do this again is to make sure we don't repeat the same mistakes, and making sure we don't repeat the same mistakes comes from knowing what those mistakes were, who committed them, and how they were covered up. So I'm all for this.
Yeah, I agree. We have to shine a light on this. We have to get to the bottom. It'd be nice to get to the bottom of this, but I think we've been burned before, and we'll probably get burned again in terms of this. The one thing I'll have to say is I was so invested in that Trump thing about going to Russia and getting the hookers and pissing on the bed and stuff. That stuff was just outstanding. And once
those
they pulled
the rug, golden era of Reddit politics posting. Yeah.
So yeah, once they pulled the rug on that, I felt like I lost a little bit inside, like something inside me died as a result of that. So I had so much invested in it. Such a great story, by the way. But amazing. What else could I say? This sick Rand Paul and all that. The way he's going after Fauci, he's an absolute animal.
Yeah, yeah, he's a medical professional himself, right? They don't take kindly to this sort of behavior within the ranks. Anyways, that was number 317. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. accessofeasy.com. And of course, we'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Yeah, take care.